Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and joining me in the studio today is my lovely co-host, Michelle Matthews. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin.
This is your first time co-hosting with me.
It is, and I'm excited.
It's very excited. Well, this is my favorite time of the month. It's our Thai Atlanta special. So we get some awesome Thai people in here. And as usual, we have Paul Swamy, Rajan, did I do that all right? Raj, I'm just going to call you Raj from the rest of the interview.
That's perfect.
In the studio with us, and he's brought with us Barry Patel, the president of Total Therapeutic Management, and also Shelly Saxena.
Yes, I got it right.
All right, the founder and CEO of Sevamob.
That's correct.
All right, perfect. Well, Raj, what's been going on at Thai? What are you guys doing? What are you guys planning for 2014?
Well, you know, we are practicing what we like to call sharpening the saw. The big things that happened is, you know, my term as president ended in December, and I just get to serve as a board member, and we have a new president this year, and very, very excited. I mean, we, you know, with Thai, I mean, we have such great programs and people and leadership that when we transition, no one ever sees the difference. So I have to just clarify that, you know, instead of sending me email, send it to Karen. So I can get a better control on my inbox. But everyone's actively involved in different pillars and leadership. And
definitely. Well, you guys have Karen Robinson Cope is your new president.
Yeah, is our president for this year and next year. And in our in our planning, we also have identified and elected the president following Karen, who's going to be Kanchana Raman from 2016 and 2017.
Definitely. You guys are smart. You're going with women, so you know you're going in the right direction.
We figured that, with women being the power of the next 4 years, it's like, you know, we got two powerful, influential women with some of the best altruistic skills and CEOs to come back in and show that leadership is all about meritocracy.
Definitely. Right. So, well, I love what you do there, where you guys actually have your president and your upcoming president. You vote on them. So the changing of the guard doesn't sort of put your whole organization to 180. No one's trying to change things. Everyone's pretty on base.
That's the goal, right? You know, every president wants to come in and go zigzag, and then you look back and the organization goes nowhere. Right.
Yeah, but what that shows is that you're really practicing good governance principles because you're thinking about that leadership more long-term than year-to-year.
You hit it right on, Michelle. Yeah. I mean, we call it like, yeah, you hit it right on, because if you want to build the organization year over year and improve, I mean, when you ask what's big for 2014, we do something, a lot of great things, and we continue to scale. Right? I mean, we have a core metric of mentoring people and companies. So we are focused. I mean, if we did 50 or 60 last year, I think it was 56 to be correct, of companies that we mentored and 111 individuals. This year, the goal is to do more of that, mm-hmm. right? And that kind of drives and aligns everyone to say, okay, how can we continue to impact our community and grow?
Definitely. Right.
Great.
So let's go into it. I always love hearing about it every episode, going to the kind of programs that you guys have. I know it ranges from people in high school all the way through people at any stage of their company. So
absolutely. So I'll start with the high school program, which is the youngest age. So we start working with kids, I think 14, 15 are the cutoff to get them in. And we provide them with a full, it's a year-long program where we teach them all aspects of being an entrepreneur. And then they get to create their own little businesses and participate in the business plan competition locally. They get some prize money here, and if they go on to the global, Thai obviously, as most
global.
People know, yeah, we're global. We have 61 chapters, 17 countries, so we have different chapters competing in the global competition, the high school category, and there's prize money awarded there as well, right? Okay. So that's one our program, and for this year, we're adding a new program. Which is focused on university students, and it's called TYE, University Edition.
Very cool. I think I went to one of your events, and you guys were introducing two of the kids that have gone through TYE and they actually have started their own company now from their concept.
Yeah,
talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Two of the kids, what's amazing is these high school kids are 14, 15, 16, right? What we have found was the kids would come after they finished their class. The following year, they're back helping the new younger kids. And a couple of them, you look at the Indian community, dropping out of school is not a phrase that you use. Right?
Not an option,
right? You know, you do that along with whatever you're doing, you are going to get educated, right? So these kids, they created a not-for-profit. They started as a social venture, and they focused on teaching high school kids worldwide and crowdsource them and help them learn English, right? So very clever, very intuitive, and they're building their plan. And in fact, because of all the work they did, one of the kids got accepted to Wharton Business School.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And he came back and pulled me aside and said, it was all due to Ty that he was able to get in because that's the differential that made out, right? So clearly, I mean, this is one of the many success stories, right? So we're all very proud, and that's what we hope that that the legacy of Ty is to grow and foster these kids to go and do great things and give back and continue growing our community.
I'm curious because our guests today are not high school or college students. They've passed that just a little bit. And so as Kevin said, you deal with entrepreneurs across a range of ages. What do you see that is, are there things that are specific to that younger group that perhaps we don't see in older entrepreneurs, or are they pretty much, if you're an entrepreneur, they're similar across the generations?
I'll just take it back a little bit. You know, Barry and I have been at it a couple of decades now, right? Mm-hmm. The big difference was entrepreneurship was seen as a art, right? And in thanks to the efforts of our generation, people have realized that there's still an art to it, but there's some science to it. There's some basic skills definitely that can be taught. And it essentially, even if they don't become entrepreneurs, they can become entrepreneurs. Whatever career they choose, they can be very successful. So when we created our programs at TYE, we came and said, okay, TYE high school, TYE university, college students, similar program but shortened. And this year we have 15 college teams so far signed up to compete for in our competition. You'll see that at TYCon on April 26th. That's our annual conference in our first year. Mm-hmm. And this is a statewide competition for any university in Georgia can submit teams to participate. And there's prize money and other things being awarded for it. And again, this is focusing people to think about how they can solve and be creative, and great exposure for them. Then we have a program called TYE Accelerator. TYE Accelerator focuses on two things. One is there are a lot of people say, I want to be an entrepreneur. I don't know how to get an idea, how to get started. So we do what is called TYE X ideation.
Mm-hmm.
All right? X is for accelerator. And then we have TYE X startup. Once you have an idea, and how do you go about making sure ideas are refined and executable and give you all the tools to figure out how to build your business, right? And that is open to all ages because we look at high school and college, and then once you're out, then it doesn't matter what stage in your life. In fact, the average age of an entrepreneur in the country is 39 years old.
Wow.
Right? So there's, despite the dropout of college, very, very, media biased reporting, it's actually a rarity for someone to drop out of college and do something, right? Mm-hmm. It's really someone who's built the network and the experience to say, I want to get out and do that. So we have that program. Then we have social business where we run our social accelerator, similar to what the TYE Accelerator does, but focused on social causes. And social causes here, right? I mean, there are issues in Georgia that we were not aware of when we saw people come and pitch. One is people didn't have there's no access to nutritious fresh food in certain parts of our city. I mean, that's shocking. Everyone thinks it's just readily available. Not there. There are some aspects. We all look at third world countries and other developing countries that are real deep poverty, but there's some pockets of really deep poverty within the state. And these are all areas that we just don't visualize or see. And we see people coming back and saying, how do you solve it? And what we have taken that approach is we'll work and give them the same skills, the entrepreneurial skills, to be creative to solve it and approach it like a business and for entrepreneur. And you can do it for profit or not for profit. Right?
That's great.
And we don't care where you apply it, but the goal is for us to teach it, right? Mm-hmm. And the social business pillar is to stoke that in Georgia. Then we have our... some companies that are very, entrepreneurs have done well. They got in, they grow, they become profitable. They bootstrap themselves all the way to a nice, profitable business. And a lot of them struggle because once, everything is about how do you scale, right? So mm-hmm. once you get to a certain level, you don't know how to scale to the next level. And for that, we have a program called a Council of Board Advisors, where we work with profitable companies, provide them with seasoned execs and entrepreneurs who are there as their advisory board mm-hmm. to help them solve their internal problems and mentor them and groom them into growing their businesses even more. I mean, we have some great success stories where we started working with business when they're doing $50 million in revenue, and this year I think they're crossing $100 million in revenue. So it's applicable to all ages. It's as long as the entrepreneur who's bootstrapped and realizes that they need help, we can help you, right? And the last piece, the pillar that we work on, is called enterprise to entrepreneur, right? And this is to bring innovative folks within large corporations mm-hmm. to work with entrepreneurs on solving their problems and their needs. And that's, very, very exciting program. And we already had a great success. One of our startup folks, startups actually got, we have a partnership with Travelport, which is one of mm-hmm. our large companies here, and we have several startups working within their program. And through that program, one of our startups won $250,000 in their prize money at a national competition that was held for travel startups. Right, $250,000.
That's huge.
And no equity financing, debt financing, great exposure. And that would not have been possible without the partnership. And we got more stories like that you're going to see coming out. So that way we cover everyone. So we joke that a lot of people focus about companies trying to raise money. The best way to raise money is to get customers and get paid for your service.
Absolutely. Right?
And we want to facilitate that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Barry's our, his works with our, it's been a key co-chair and charter member and mentor for many years. Mm-hmm. And he leads... the monthly programming pillar, where we put together great events monthly. Right. And then Shelley is our co-chair of our, is also entrepreneur, co-chair of our social business pillar, and they can share a lot more insight into this.
Yeah, and actually, thanks, Raj. And I wanted to add something to Raj and the question that you had about the young entrepreneurs. And actually, I've been part of Thai for close to 15 years now.
Great.
And I see more energy in the younger generation today than I've ever seen, not just within Thai, but in other parts within the entrepreneurial field. And I don't know if it's because of the job market and coming out of school, the opportunities may not be there as much as that they were before. And now they're thinking out of the box in terms of how to really utilize what they've learned. But then also on the other end of the spectrum of those that are in positions where they've worked for 20, 25 years that now are finally stepping out of the box also because of the same reason, the opportunities in the job market. So Thai's been a great platform for a lot of those individuals that have needed that support. And I think one of the biggest things I can echo what Raj said is the mentorship that's provided throughout that. So
yeah, I love that all of you are entrepreneurs, and yet you feel that strong commitment to give back. So as you tell your story to our listening audience, we want to get a flavor of sort of both side of things and also a little sort of personal, some of the challenges you have and things about yourself. So Barry, why don't we just start with you. Why don't you give us a little bit of the nickel tour of your experience and then mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about your business. And as I understand it, there are some new things that have just happened with your business. So I'm sure our listening audience is going to be excited to hear about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Thank you. So Total Therapeutic Management is a company that I founded back in 1995. And my background is a PharmD. So I've got a doctorate in pharmacy and worked with the pharmaceutical industry. and really saw some niches even back in the mid-90s that were going unmet. And so started TTM, Total Therapeutic Management, under the mission of better information leads to better outcomes. Mm-hmm. Information is key to any business, but within healthcare, it's absolutely critical. And within compared to any other industry, information is so disparate within the healthcare setting. And I think Shelley will echo that with some of the things that he's doing also to help with that. And so our key core competencies and what we provide to our clients are the ability to collect data from various sources, primarily the medical record, whether it's a paper record that a physician office uses, or whether it's an electronic record or administrative databases that has billing data. And we combine all that information and make it such that it's usable to improve quality within healthcare and improve outcomes. So better information, better outcomes. And so the company was started in 1995, and we've been going on over the last 18 years, had relationships with all the major pharmaceutical companies as clients, insurance companies such as Aetna, Cigna, United Healthcare over the years, a lot of the Blue Cross Blue Shield plans, because, again, anybody that needs to be able to evaluate and analyze their data so that way they can use it for better quality within healthcare or to make better decisions, that's who we serve. And so over the years, we've built relationships with provider practices, health systems, who are the partners that have that data that then can be used for different types of quality improvement and research type projects.
Yeah, Barry. So a lot of times as our listeners hear this, particularly in the healthcare field, you know, big data and aggregating this data or disaggregating it so that people can use it. Give us a specific example of how your product is used for those that may not really be familiar with this area.
Sure. Let's take a chronic disease state like diabetes. Diabetes, a patient that has diabetes has many other comorbidities or other healthcare issues going on, heart disease or cholesterol and hypertension and things of that nature. And so what we'll do is develop a protocol working with a particular insurance company to go in and research how and take basically a snapshot of the population and how they're being managed for diabetes from the standpoint of the physician records as well as the administrative records, the prescription records, and put all that information together and then be able to take that information in a very actionable format back out to the providers, the nurses, the pharmacists that then need that information so that way they can see where there are treatment gaps and where improvements can be made, where patients may not be taking their medications and where they can call them back in to counsel them or refer them to other services within that particular health system. So the organization that pays us is really to help move the whole quality process within healthcare.
So you guys have really been ahead of the game. You said 1995. Everyone's trying to do this now, and I mean, there's HIPAA compliance. Everyone's trying to make everything electronic. And you, 1995, you're like, you know what? This is a problem that I'm going to solve, and you did it way before anybody.
Right, and that's that. It was a challenge back then because majority, 90%, were paper-based records, mm-hmm. and so you had to go into the office and you had to read scribble basically to extract that information and put it into a usable format. So there's obviously a big need for organizations like us with that clinical expertise. We employ nurses and pharmacists across the country to go in and do that work. But you're right, Kevin. Basically, the times have changed, but yet even today, believe it or not,
oh yeah,
majority of records are still paper-based. And even the ones that are in electronic medical record systems, there are certain data fields that could be extracted out, but a lot of notes are still kept in subjective text fields that, such as progress notes. And so it still takes work to use that, make that work.
Yeah, well, it'll help you find that niche, given that you were you had your doctorate. You already had it, the scribble down, so you knew how to read.
Right. He knows the language.
he knew how to read others. I'm kind of wanting to follow up on that, Kevin, because I think a lot of times people have a good idea or they think about something and then they don't act on it. And our guests today have taken that idea and acted. So, you know, what advice would you give people on sort of finding that niche? How do they keep up with things to then be able to say, this is really something that we might be able to make a business out of?
So you have to be a sponge, first of all, to know everything within a particular industry. And you don't want to be too broad. You have to focus in on certain areas that you think that where you start anticipating that there are issues within your particular field of interest. And then by being a sponge and working to uncover what those issues might be, then you know you ask a lot of questions of people, you read a lot, and then really it takes initiative to do that. You can learn everything you want, and you can talk to people as much as you want, but you have to have the courage to take that initiative to say, okay, I'm going to turn this into an offering that then I can sell and make money. Just as Raj said, sell it and then and make money, and that's the best form of raising capital. And I think there's a lot of different ways you go about that, but the best advice I give is really have a plan in place early on. Even if you're a young person in college, mm-hmm. start with the mindset right there and set the goals. But even when you're within a big corporation, and sometimes that's the best place you can understand where some of the missing niches are, that either you can apply yourself and be an entrepreneur and be able to help that organization. But if the niche is not being filled, that's the perfect opportunity, and usually the best entrepreneurs mm-hmm. are built that way.
Well, you mentioned earlier that kids nowadays are more eager. They seem to go out there, take more risk, and want to become entrepreneurs. But in 1995, you had a great degree. You could have got a really nice job. But what made you really just sort of take that leap off the cliff and say, I'm going to start my own company and do my own thing?
Well, it's a funny story because, I had kind of built it up for about 6 months. Again, I was an entrepreneur because I worked for a big pharmaceutical company and developed a lot of the ideas there. And I told my wife, we were married about 2.5 years, and we said, this is what I'm going to do. It was going to be January 1st, 1995. It's a new world. And December 15th, I turned in my 2 weeks resignation. December 23rd, she said, honey, I've got some news for you.
I think we can guess what that is.
Yes, exactly. So actually, my daughter was born July of 1995. And so Michelle, you were mentioning that something happened this year, and she went off to college this year.
Okay, congratulations.
Yeah,
thank you. And coincidentally, I sold my company this year too. So the year she came into my life.
What school did she go to?
She's at UGA right now.
Oh, good for her. So, good for her.
I thought she was going to Harvard or something. I have to sell my company. <after one.
laughs> So anyway, the decision was, it doesn't happen overnight. It just, you build it up over time. But that was a point, obviously, to make that decision to say, okay, well, should I go ahead and rescind my resignation and, the company insurance, I'm going to have to go on COBRA, don't know what the future holds. But I think once you're very deeply seated in understanding what your passion is and knowing what you're going to do, it doesn't matter what happens, you're going to move forward with what it is. And I think a lot of people sometimes put their own obstacles in the way that this isn't the right time, or I'll wait for the right time. But there is no right time. You just have to do it.
Yeah, so tell our listening audience a little bit about that acquisition and kind of how it came about and your role as part of it going forward.
So we were acquired the end of December by a global pharmaceutical and healthcare services provider named Indegene, and they have made 3 acquisitions here in the U.S. market, and we're actually the fourth one. They've got 10 the presence in the global sense and 10 offices across the world, as well as 3 here in the U.S. And they wanted to improve their increase their footprint in the U.S. as well as in a new offering to healthcare organizations and health plans, which is where we have a deep seated foothold. And so it was a strategic acquisition. They came to us in the summer, and basically we saw a lot of synergies there. In mm-hmm. Before you know it, we were kind of in due diligence, and here we are today as one organization and integrating both of our resources and service offerings. And I'm still leading our division as president, especially for the next 2 years as we kind of work through this transition. But they are looking at bigger things here in the U.S. market and multiple acquisitions beyond this.
So. Well, I think you just made a really good point. As you said, that your philosophy is really, if you're going to merge with someone, they have to match. If they're clashing, there's no way that's going to work, and it's not going to benefit both mm-hmm. parties.
Yeah, I think sometimes there are acquisitions made just to gain market share mm-hmm. into a particular area. Ours was not that, because they're not in the market that we are in. So it was really a synergy, so that way they can expand their current resources, offerings to a whole new market that made sense. So you're right, Kevin. I mean, there has to be a synergy. And cultures are very important, too. And that was one thing that was important. They're a very employee-centric company, we are, too. And so we wanted to make sure their leadership understood how we worked and our philosophy there. And that's always got to mesh always. you know, just there's so many things that you have to look at besides just those business synergies and things of that nature.
Definitely. So what's next for you, Barry? What are the plans for 2014 and ongoing for your company?
Well, it's exciting times now because now it's opened up a whole new world to understand, you know, there are so many other capabilities that now we can provide to our clients. And so I'm just chomping at the bit and, you know, waiting to get back out to our clients to now be able to offer new things. And so it's exciting to be able to just be part of that integration. I'll be helping them with a lot of their other strategic needs as far as future acquisitions and things of that nature, but just leading the division down here for right now.
Yeah, so before we go to our next guest, Shelley, come back and tell us how TIE and your involvement in TIE has helped you create the success that you've been able to create in your business.
Sure. As I mentioned, I've been part of the TIE ecosystem, I guess if you say, over the last 10, 15 years. And that, or just as an organization, allows for so many networking opportunities and meet great people like Raj and, you know, others that have done things that and they've gone through acquisitions. And so from the standpoint of being able to lean on others' experiences, it's been great. Over the last 3-4 years, I've now been a charter member, which allows me to kind of work a little bit more deeper with the organization and, you know, just as Raj said, co-chair some of their specific areas of needs and give back even to advise companies and look at where opportunities might be for companies that are within the TIE ecosystem where I can make some connections for them. So it's been really helpful to really build a bigger network also.
Great.
All right, Barry, so how can our listeners reach out, learn more about your company, and get in contact with them?
Sure. Our website is probably the best place to start, and it's rxttm.com. And we'll have information on there regarding our new acquisition. There'll be some changes on that, but that they can keep up with it from there.
All right. Well, thanks for being on.
Well, thank you.
Well, next up, we want to talk to Shelley with Sevamob. That doesn't have anything to do with the real mob. I know we were talking about The Godfather earlier.
No, not really.
But you're in the social business space, and I know Raj talked a little bit about that with TIE, but can you tell us a little bit about your company?
Yeah, so Sevamob is fundamentally trying to change how healthcare is delivered in the developing countries. And right now, we are in India, and we have licensed our model to a company in Liberia, and they are implementing the model there. So what we do is we operate mobile clinics, which provide primary care on premises to students and employees and businesses on a monthly subscription model. And we also operate a health exchange through which internet-savvy patients can get telehealth services like second opinions and video appointments from participating doctors on that exchange. So those are our two services, and we are currently doing it in India.
Okay, so is this sort of done remotely? There's like maybe something you do with an iPad or something or devices, or how's this implemented?
Yes, so in our mobile clinics, we have a van which goes with doctors, and those doctors carry Android tablets, and that tablet includes an electronic medical record for each patient that we serve, and so we provide basic care on premises that includes things like blood pressure, blood sugar, ECG, height, weight management, diet planning, OPD checkups, dental like you know, work, vision screenings, and all of that stuff right on premises. We also dispense medicines for common ailments like say for stomach worms or say calcium deficiency in women or iron deficiency or folic acid deficiency, all of which is very like you know common amongst women mm-hmm. or like you know kids, especially in like you know low income areas in India. And then if they have more advanced needs, then we have back office specialists who will work with us on a contract model. And they then either provide a prescription or no charge appointments to our subscribers. In case of some emergency, the patients can actually get hospitalized and receive up to 50,000 rupees, roughly $1,000 per year of hospitalization benefits in our in-network hospitals.
Okay.
So Shelley, tell us a little bit how you got into this niche. What made you know that this was an area that had the opportunity for you and your organization?
We were actually working with University of Georgia and University of Tennessee from my first company, SASMOB. We were doing some stuff with them for the farmers, growers, and landscapers in the U.S. And we thought that model would work very well in India But the problem was that in our target audience, there was a high illiteracy rate. The second was they didn't have data capable smartphones to do the stuff mm-hmm. on their own. So we knew we had to put some field teams in the middle. And then we did a survey to figure out what it is that the customers would be willing to pay a monthly subscription for. So healthcare was mentioned by 80% of the people. Mm. So we said, all right, we'll roll out with healthcare and primary healthcare and with advisory, which we were doing for farmers in the US. And over time, we found much more uptake on the healthcare side, and so invested all of our energies on the healthcare side.
That's very interesting, the subscription-based model. I want to go into that in a little bit. But first, the problem you guys are solving, you guys are taking things that normally aren't detrimental to people, but in the low-income areas, people don't catch them, and they can become life-threatening, and they shouldn't be. But you guys are pointing those out and solving those problems and saving people.
That is correct. In fact, it goes beyond that because we are providing end-to-end care to our subscribers for $2 a month, which would appear weird. Talking about it in the U.S., but we're making that work in India on a for-profit model.
Great. So what has been some of the challenges you've had about expanding in the developing countries and bringing this model, and how do you see your company growing across geographies?
So first of all, on our core mobile clinics, our main challenge has been that audience that we serve, they have been burnt a lot by companies who have overpromised and underdelivered, mm-hmm. oftentimes running away with their money. So just gaining their trust is one of the biggest things. But once they see the service, once they experience it, they realize that, all right, makes sense. Our plans with the mobile clinics is to, for example, expand in additional districts directly from our mobile clinics. And the model is very scalable. It's very low cost. It's very replicable. And we have gotten some seed as well as angel funding to do that. In other geographies, we will license our model for the mobile clinics to other healthcare providers. We will not offer our mobile clinics directly in ourselves in other geographies. Mm-hmm. But we will license our model and other technology to other providers. Then with our health exchange, we want to go ourselves to various countries, developing countries, and our first country being India, where we just launched the exchange.
Definitely. Well, how's that going so far? I'm sure the response has been great.
So in just 3 weeks of operation, we have signed up around 30 doctors, and we have around 4,000 patients automatically seeded from our own mobile clinics into that exchange. And so on all these patients, we have a single electronic medical record, which is shared amongst all the providers which participate in that exchange. So what that means is, let's say tomorrow you get some drug for diabetes or some pain management, medicine, mm-hmm. right? So if you go to doctor number two, once they get access to the medical record, they know exactly what care was provided by the previous doctor, which, as you know, is probably a problem in the U.S. also.
Yeah, definitely.
One doctor doesn't know what the other doctor did.
They'll prescribe a bad medication.
Exactly. And so that's the problem we're trying to solve in much more through this health exchange.
Definitely. How did you come up with this? I want to know your back stories, how you decided to become an entrepreneur, how you decided to tackle this problem right here, and why what made you so passionate about it.
So first of all, Raj is responsible for this. He was our mentor on our first company, and we were pitching him and trying to find some funding sources through him and from him. And he said, dude, just go ahead and do it, get some customers, and the funding will follow from there. So that's how we sort of got started in the entrepreneurship, and things just worked out from there. Our first company, we've been cash flow positive for a while. We've never taken funding. It's all been funded from operations.
Bootstrapped
and funded from operations. And and then this company just was an offshoot where we took that technology and applied it to healthcare just because we saw a need and a white space in the market.
Okay, so did you go through the TIEX program, or what program did you go through in TI?
I did not go to TIEX program, but where TIE helped me was, for example, Raj has been an awesome mentor for a while, and then Barry.
I hear that from a lot of people.
Yep, and Barry was introduced, we were introduced to Barry through TIE, and Barry is part of our board of advisors now. We have two other board of advisors from TIE also, so that's been one of the best ways where TIE has helped us out, really.
Definitely. Well, speak to it. I know they have their COBRA program. Speak how having a board of advisors really has helped grow your company and given you sort of some insight into things that you didn't know.
First of all, for an entrepreneur like myself, it's been pretty much a greenhorn, so getting that advice from this board of advisors is pretty useful. Especially Barry has helped us, for example, do a special service for orphanages and old age homes in India, where somebody in the U.S. can sponsor the care of a kid in an orphanage or elderly person in an old age home and track the health updates of the sponsored person online. So Barry helped us put together that program, and that's been like, you know, going well now. Then the second advisor we found from Thai, Katie Elizabeth, she actually is helping us out a lot with marketing. Mm-hmm. She has told us how to, like, you know, manage the social networks, how to, like, engage the different bloggers and stuff, how to do, like, you know, do all types of, like, you know, marketing tricks. So she is a bag of tricks.
She's a magician, yeah. We love her.
Yep. And our third advisor from Thai, Neerav Desai, he is... he is pretty well known in the telehealth community, and he is a great consultant. And so he's been helping us with, first of all, gaining some mindshare in that market, and also just like advising along the way on what features, what to do, and how to do it, and so on.
I'm curious, for our listening audience, how do you work with your board of advisors so that you can sort of squeeze out all their knowledge and be able to leverage that in your business? Do you hold meetings? Do you engage them in individually, how do you make that work for you?
I hound them. No, no, they've been pretty awesome. So we schedule meetings, and these meetings I try to keep short because obviously, like, their time is, like, you know, pretty important. And we do monthly sync ups in these meetings. And obviously, if a meeting is needed before, like, you know, a certain time period, then we'll go ahead and do those meetings. And they have been very prompt in their responses and to us, and in their advice to us.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Can I add something here? You see how fast Shelley talks already. He squeezes so much into a 30-minute phone call that you wouldn't believe it. So, yeah, he does make these meetings so concise and very focused, and so he gets a lot out of you in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'm curious. Shelley, can you give us maybe one shortcut or just something very practical that in talking to one of your board of advisors, you were able to sort of that hit on the head that said, oh, wow, that was right in front of me? Because that's been my experience. I had a board of directors when I first started my consulting practice, and sometimes it's not the big, big idea. It's that you're so heads down in something that they come up and they've seen it before, so they're able to say, hey, try this. So give our listeners an example of something specific they helped you resolve quickly.
So, for example, Katie has helped us a lot in marketing, and we were wondering how much we have to spend on marketing and this and that. So she, for example, told us how we could get a press release out really inexpensively, mm-hmm. right, and the channels where we could push it really quickly. That was one way where she, like, you know, helped us. Barry here, like, so when he first heard about our concept, he said, well, you guys are doing it in like low-income areas, but you can apply exactly the same service for orphanages and old age homes and keep the delivery model exactly the same.
Wow. Mm.
So those are just two examples, like, you know, which come right off the top of the head.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, it's sort of nice having someone getting to look. You're so focused in on what you're doing in this little world, and someone looking in from the outside can see things, that angles that you might not have even thought of. So
yep.
That's great. So Barry, I just want to bring you in just a little bit because you're one of his board of advisors. How has it been for you getting to give back and getting to be a board of be an advisor to people?
What's great is when you don't have to be on the day-to-day of everything, but then you can just look at something from the outside and be able to just give.
And your entrepreneur comes out and you're like, yeah, all right, yeah. I get to do that. Yeah, yeah. You get to implement it. I get to come up with the idea.
Yeah, after that 30-minute conversation is gone, I'm doing my regular thing and he'll call me again in a month. It's done and yeah. We're ready to go. So it's been great to see how ideas develop, and Shelley's been great at developing them beyond just the advice we give.
Yeah, so just on Friday, we was in a conversation about mentoring, and one of the things that came up, and I'm also looking to Raj, you can certainly chime in on this, you know, sometimes as the mentor, you learn things from the mentee, and so I just would be curious, because I think a lot of times if people have not been in that relationship, they think it's sort of a one-way thing, and I think mentees sometimes are concerned, I can't really give anything back. So Barry or Raj or Shelley, have you had that experience where you've been mentoring somebody, but you've gotten sort of a glimmer of an idea or something that's helped you in what you were doing?
I mean, it's definitely a two-way street because you're trying to get as much also to help enrich sort of the future for yourself too. So you definitely do that. In fact, one example was, besides that, I mentored a Mercer pharmacy student, and she had an idea for heart failure because her grandmother went through heart failure, and she had some ideas around it. And I learned so much from a student who had gone through that experience through the problems within the healthcare system that now she's, you know, got some ideas, and I was able to give her advice. But I think I learned more about some of the in-depth. So it's definitely an opportunity to learn and understand what's going on.
Yeah, mentoring, you know, especially when working with entrepreneurs, is that, you know, it really gives you a visibility into new ideas, new problems. And, you know, you're coaching them with your experience that you built on, and I'm sorry, I used the wrong word. Because there's actually, coaching is not the right word, right? I mean, so you can be a coach, you can be an expert, or you can be a mentor. A mentor, it's a relationship, right? A coach is, you know, specifically asking you to kind of guide you and get it done. An expert is someone you go to advise for a specific topic. So, and when we, and I break that up because it's very easy to get confused on all of them, right? But in a true mentoring relationship, you're learning as much about as much as the mentee is learning, you're also learning new things. It's fulfilling on both ends. And that's really the driver that, you know, in my business, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm passionate about entrepreneurs. I like all sectors, all ideas. I just, you know, that's intellectual stimulation. And so working with the mentee helps me, like, one, learn about an area that they are experts in, and I kind of, like, learn from them. And I'm sharing my experiences of how to build or areas that they could work on and other pieces. So it's a win-win on both sides. And it's very fulfilling because, you know, over time, I have, you know, people look and say, how do you know about so many different sectors? You know, the time invested in spending in helping other people actually enriches you, which may actually come back and help you think about your business differently, right? So that's the virtuous cycle that we try to strive to create and foster at Thai. And I think it's been very helpful.
Definitely. Well, it speaks for itself that everyone that comes through the program ends up staying with you guys forever and then giving back for nothing just because they know it helps them and it helps the whole thing. They really believe in the process.
Absolutely. I just want to touch on our model at Thai, which is very, very unique, right? We talk about charter members and associate members, right? Charter members, by definition, Thai was created where charter members are successful execs in very key phase are willing and able to give back, right? A lot of people are not willing and able. You got to be willing and able to give back. And that really the dynamic, we almost have over nearly 100 charter members in Atlanta and 2,500 worldwide. And that culture and that we look at, you know, it's you're invited to be a charter member if you're successful in your business and you reach a stage where other people, where you can actually benefit other people. And that virtuous cycle has really kicked in. And what we have in Thai Atlanta, our associate members help each other. So there's a lot of spirit of giving back forward, paying it forward, and sharing, which is where, you know the energy and the development in our community kicks in, right? And end of the day, I mean, we're all in it together. I mean, if you want our economy to prosper, I mean, I don't want to live in a city that where the economy is failing, and we want to do our part, right? And I'll take a personal belief here that I think entrepreneurs are the only ones who ever change the world, and they're the only ones who are going to change the world. So
I love that. I love the win-win philosophy of time.
Yeah, Shelley. So what's on the horizon? If we were to come back and talk to you in the next 12 to 18 months, where do you see your growth and some of the things that you're really trying to accomplish?
In the next 18 months in India, our mobile clinics will be at least in like in two or three states. And when I say a state in India, that means really the state in which we are in right now, it's 120 million people. The state next door is 80 million people. So we're talking about large
numbers. Small states.
That's huge.
And then with our health exchange, we will be in entire India. And we will totally redefine how primary healthcare is being accessed in India.
I love that. Well, talk about, you guys just have a new offering. You guys announced Seva 360. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so that is the health exchange that I mentioned. And so what that does is the patient can find very quickly doctors for a specific purpose. and then either get second opinions from those doctors or get video appointments or get clinic appointments from those doctors. The beauty of the model is the patient can, there's a single electronic medical record, mm-hmm. which is shared amongst all the healthcare providers.
I love that patient, aspect of right? it.
And then the doctors have one more incentive. One, they get obvious revenue from the site. The second is we provide free practice management software to them. We provide free EHR system to them so that in India, I don't know if you're aware or not, but a lot of these doctors, especially small and medium clinics, they do not have any software. They are totally operating on paper. So they have an incentive to streamline their clinic also if they become part of our exchange. So it's a twofold benefit. It's benefit to the patients.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned that you, and I'm sorry, I can't remember, but there's a country that you're working on.
Liberia.
Liberia. So how do you choose your markets, outside of your initial market, within India, but as you go to other continents and other developing countries?
So right now we're pretty small, so we don't choose. The opportunity comes to us.
That's nice.
So in this case, it's actually a pastor based in Atlanta, and the pastor was going to go to a seminary, and then the pastor heard about our model, and he said he's not going to go to the seminary, and instead he's going to implement the model in Liberia, because the doctor-patient ratio in Liberia is really, really poor. There are in a patient a population of around 2 million people, just 100 doctors. He thought that model would work really nicely there, and so he applied it.
It's got to be really nice to wake up every morning and go attack this problem. That's one that you can really feel good about.
And that's the good part of being operating a social business, right? You don't need to motivate anybody. Everybody is automatically motivated.
Yeah, aligning to the mission and the impact that you're trying to have. But one of the things I take from the story that you were just sharing about how you got is that it's also about your networks. It's about the relationships you have, and then those things, when they align, then they help you see new opportunities. So that's great.
Definitely. And Atlanta especially has quite a few of these. TAI is one. Wireless Technology Forum is another one. Acumen Plus Atlanta is a good network for social impact companies or just folks interested. And then Village Capital is based out of here. Grey Ghost is based out of here. So there are a bunch of options available to people.
Mm-hmm. So what do you guys need more of? Do you need more people to sponsor people in India? Do you need more people to sign up different countries? What are you guys looking for right now that we can help with?
So the first thing would be for our Seva Angels service, which is for orphanages and old age homes. Mm-hmm. We would love to have folks in the U.S. sponsor the care of kids in orphanages and elderly people in old age homes. And it's fully transparent. It's the only service of its kind anywhere in the world where the sponsor has full transparency of how the money is being spent.
Okay.
And then second, we just did our angel round and shortly would come back to the market for our Series A. And we would just love to follow up with additional investors.
Okay, I love that. Well, how can people reach out, learn more, and donate these services and contact you?
It starts from sevamob.com, SEVAMOB.com.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on. I love your service. It's very cool and innovative. And
thank you.
Great. Raj, you just got to be beaming with pride. You got people like this in your organization. It makes your old job easy, and it's going to make Karen's job easy too. Just
absolutely. But we've been 15 years. I'm one of the co-founders, so we've been through this for a long time. And this is what we all decided to give back and see that coming out, right? So it's very fulfilling and really enjoyable. And the energy that comes around, even if you have a bad day, I suggest go to a Thai meeting and get better, right? So. And Barry, Shelley, they're all great entrepreneurs, and Barry is giving back tremendously. Shelley is building a successful company, but he's still giving back. And one of the key things that we have done in TAI is really in the social business pillar is we have bought all the different groups together, the different social ventures together.
No one's really doing that.
So we have been really good at that, and so we have a partnership with Professor Mahmoud Yunus and his foundation. And along with that, TAI Atlanta is working with the Nobel Peace Laureate Summit that's coming here in 2015. And that's part of that's actually driven by Professor Yunus, who was a Nobel Peace Prize winner. And along with President Jimmy Carter, and I think there's MLK was actually a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Atlanta is actually home to 5 Nobel Peace Prize winners.
Wow.
Right? You know, Muhammad Yunus is an adopted city. So, we got a great group here, and we are partnered with Points of Light on some aspects. So what we are essentially leveraging, we are partnered with Village Capital on some of our events. So we pull all this together to try to see how we can continue to foster and do that. And Atlanta is an unbelievably social-focused city, mm-hmm. and we don't realize that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I love the win-win. I know I'm harping on, but the win-win philosophy at TIE, it really goes with what we believe at Business Radio X, and everybody wins. Do you have any upcoming dates for anything, like TIECon?
So we have our monthly events on the second Wednesday of every month. I believe the next one is on February 10th or 11th. I apologize, I don't have the calendar in front.
That's fine.
But the big event is our TIE conference, where you'll see all these high school kids pitching, the university students pitching.
We'll be there broadcasting live.
That'll be fantastic, and you should interview all those guys.
Definitely,
right?
We want to.
And then we great keynote. That's our annual conference. It's on Saturday, April 26th. Block it. It's the best one full day you can spend to be inspired. And it's from 8 to 5:30 in the evening.
All right.
Right.
So, and what's the website for TIE again?
www.tie-atlanta.org.
Well, thank you all for coming on today. And Michelle, thank you so much for co-hosting. It's been fabulous.
Thank you. I've learned a lot, and I appreciate everyone sharing their story.
Definitely. Well, this is Kevin Finn for Michelle Matthews and all our guests today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Business Radio.